to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio tonight by my co-host, Bill Rowland. We're here in Memphis, AM 1380 WLRM radio, going out across the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org and, of course, to our satellite and affiliate AM-FM stations across the country, courtesy of Liberty News Radio Network. While Bill and I are slaving away in the studio tonight, Eddie the Bombardier Miller is walking the streets of Manhattan in a political cesspool T-shirt. Right there in Times Square, Winston Smith taking the night off with a bottle of scotch, probably listening to the show right now from his workshop. That's life, guys. We continue on behind enemy lines right now with Keith Alexander. We were examining, in the latter part of the first hour, the nomination by Barack Obama, the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor to the United States Supreme Court. We're going to continue along with that discussion right now, and in about 8 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Jared Taylor, editor of American Renaissance. He, too, will be weighing in on this subject while talking about his most recent article, which appeared just last week at Talky Mag. So all that forthcoming and more, Tom Sunick in the third hour. Keith, continue on with your thoughts, sir.
Well, one of the things you asked me to comment on was this per curiam decision that was rendered by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, the second level. It's a below the Supreme Court, that's the highest court in the land after the Supreme Court. And appeals are taken by the Supreme Court under what's called a writ of certiorari in most circumstances. In other words, it's totally discretionary on the part of the U.S. Supreme Court as to whether or not they would hear an appeal of a decision of the circuit courts, the 11th Circuit, 10th Circuit, whatever, or the 2nd Circuit, which is around New York, and I think this was New Haven, Connecticut, fire department case. So that would be in the 2nd Circuit, where Sotomayor gave the decision. And rather than giving a decision, she just basically put one line and said, we're affirming what the other court did. And by doing that, she was intentionally trying to hide the significance of this case from the new Supreme Court that has a conservative majority. This was nothing short of intellectual dishonesty, and if it had not been for her fellow Hispanic judge on the Second Circuit, Jose Cabranos, sounding the alarm, she may have succeeded in her attempt to bury this case. And see, that just shows you she is the type of person that thinks that lying and cheating is okay as long as it's serving the interests of racial minorities. And that's a very, very dangerous person to have on the Supreme Court, in my opinion.
So we've already established that the Republicans aren't going to do anything to stop her. We've already established that she is an avowed, I hate to use the word racist, because let's face it, that means everything, but she's certainly anti-white. You know, let's leave it at that. And of course, that's okay. But if a white person is even pro himself, that's abominable. So I don't know. It could be very bad. Bill, your thoughts.
Keith, have you heard the statistic that 60% of her decisions in the lower court were overturned on appeal? Have you heard that figure?
I've also heard that she is known to be an intellectual lightweight among the other judges on the Second Circuit and the law clerks that work for her.
I don't find that hard to believe.
Well, Keith, here's another thing. There's a couple of issues here. One, and both of these, I think, are in the legal realm. One, I guess you've heard about Justice Department's failure to take any sort of punitive action against the two Black Panthers who were already found guilty of voter intimidation in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Brock dropped that, didn't he?
The Department of Justice simply abandoned the case.
Well, they're probably doing what the Obama administration wants them to do, and it's, you know, just another example of this acorn-driven voter fraud and the gangster government that we're getting under the Obama administration. They basically protect their own, and they've deep-sixed any prosecution of what one election official said the most outrageous example of voter intimidation that he has seen including during the Civil Rights era in the South.
All right, well, here's the question, guys, I guess. We know this woman's bad news. We know she's going to be rabidly anti-white, which, of course, would make her anti-Christian and anti-American as far as that goes. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to sit here and take it? I mean, what can we do? Basically, when she gets confirmed with a Republican stamp of approval, the court will still sit at a so-called 5-4 conservative majority. She's basically filling the seat for David Souter, who was, of course, far leftist radical. You know, but if one of these so-called conservatives, and I use that word loosely when referring to the Supreme Court justices as conservative, if Barack is able to get another one in there, you know, then what do we do?
This, you said it exactly. It's a thin blue line. Right now, that's not going to make any difference. Sotomayor is what our real danger is to us and to white people generally and to conservatives is the, you know, appointments that are made by Republican presidents, like appointing a David Souter, who turns out to be probably the second most liberal person on the court, and we have a conservative president, supposedly, and a Republican who appoints him. But right now, the only thing that's holding the deluge back is the Supreme Court. I think that George Walker Bush made two good appointments to the Supreme Court, almost in spite of himself. If he had gotten his first choices in, we would have a disastrous Supreme Court. But somehow serendipity stepped in, and we have two pretty sound conservatives on the Supreme Court appointed.
As far as Supreme Court
justices
go, I would agree, yes.
Do what now?
No, I was just saying, as far as Supreme Court justices go, I would have to agree with you. He could have done worse. I think that's an accurate assessment. But so, you know, basically, the status quo isn't changing one way or the other in this appointment, but, of course, you would never hope for something this bad to manifest itself. But, you know, I don't know. Again, there's nothing we can do about it except set back and take it. It's like we've set back and taken everything that's happened since the 1954.
Well, we can vote against the Republicans that refuse to speak out about this person and thoroughly vet her and let Pat Buchanan said that what we need to do is thoroughly question her. Draw this out. Let the American people see exactly what has been offered to them by Obama and the Democrats. And if that doesn't alarm them, if that doesn't awaken them, well, quite frankly, they're terminal. There's no hope for them.
Yeah, well, everyone knows that they are either absolutely false opposition or they're committing suicide and they don't even know it yet. Either way, Keith Alexander, I want to thank you, sir, for your contributions to this program, for your knowledge, and for your ability to elaborate and expound upon the issues of importance to our people as you do every week when we go behind enemy lines with you. You're a great asset to the movement and certainly to our production here. And we'll see you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Look forward to the rest of the show. I'll be
you got
in.
It. And speaking of the rest of the show, Jared Taylor will be with us in just a couple of moments' time live to talk about his most recent article entitled Whiteout, which appeared at the Talkie Mag website. TalkieMag.com, I believe, is the address. And then a little later on in the third hour, Dr. Tomislav Sunic, former Croatian diplomat, I should say, author, professor. We have got an academically astute lineup tonight, I would say. And don't forget, this is your final chance, your last chance, gang, to take advantage of our fundraising appeal for this month. If you donate at thepoliticalcesspool.org $100 or more before the end of tomorrow night, we will give you a complimentary copy of Craig Boddicker's gripping DVD documentary, A Conversation About Race. So you'll be helping out our show, helping us reach a growing audience, and getting a great DVD for yourself in return. So we invite you and ask you to take advantage of that opportunity during this next commercial break while we're getting Jared Taylor here in the studio. Bill, you can't say enough about Jared and Tom. I mean, we're going to have a good show for the rest of it. We've already had a great show. The next hour and a half is going to be particularly enthralling, I would say.
It's going to be a double-barrel shotgun. You're going to get one blast and then another following very quickly. So stay tuned, because these two are certainly two of the best guests we could possibly have on the show.
They cut like a sharpened knife through hot butter. They are razor sharp. And we're going to see what they have to say about the issues of the day. when the Political Cesspool radio program returns on the Liberty News Radio Network this, the 30th night of May 2009. We are still here with you. I still marvel at it all. Still marvel. It's been a long time since October 26, 2004, our first night on air, and it just keeps getting better thanks to you, our listening audience, and of course, to our fine guests like Jared and Tom. So, all right, enough about that. Jared Taylor on deck. He'll be our guest right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. As advertised, we are now joined live by Jared Taylor himself. And for the introduction of Jared Taylor tonight, we go to Bill Rowland. Bill, it sounds like a heavyweight boxer coming out. I don't know why I just said it like that. But Bill, anyway, introduce our guest for the evening.
Our guest this evening, of course, is well known to most of the Political Cesspool audience. He is the, I guess, managing editor and founder of American Renaissance, a journal of race, and I guess we should say race and reason. And, of course, we are always delighted to have him, a Yale graduate, and certainly a man who has been in the forefront of speaking up for white people and whites' rights and having a reasoned and always intellectual discussion about race. Jared Taylor, welcome again to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back.
You know, Jared, you've been on with us quite a few times since our inception a few years back, and I was just looking through the calendar, and we're going to have to fire our scheduling department. I don't think you've been with us since September, and that's far too long, but we are happy to have you back with us this evening. I was reading on the internet at the Talkie Mag website your excellent article entitled Whiteout, in which you address some of the concerns we were speaking about on the program last week and then again in the first hour tonight. If you could, Jared, just go with it in whichever direction you'd like. What was the article about?
I was asked to write an article about the confused state of white consciousness, and I really wasn't quite sure where to begin, but I did begin with the famous case of the white New Haven fireman, whose case has gone to the Supreme Court. I'm sure that you have covered that ground in great detail on the Political Cesspool.
But, as much detail as our commercial breaks will allow.
Well, it all boils down, of course, to a desire on the part of the city of New Haven to have more non-white firemen. And so they refused to promote the whites who had scored the highest precisely because they were white. And it's hard to describe that as anything more than discrimination against white people. But this lovely Puerto Rican lady who's likely to be our next Supreme Court justice ruled at the appellate stage that, no, that was perfectly fine, that New Haven was entirely within its rights to junk the results of this promotion exam because they didn't get the blacks and the Hispanics that they were hoping for. So, you know, I went from there just to explore some of the really rather absurd views that many whites have about whites themselves. The notion that it will be perfectly fine if whites are displaced in their own homelands, that if miscegenation eliminates whites entirely, that that's going to be the happy ending. It covered a fair amount of ground, I thought.
Well, you did. It absolutely addressed a number of important topics, not the least of which, as I said, Jared, halfway facetiously, we have been covering in great detail the decision there by Sonia Sotomayor from the New Haven, Connecticut case. And, you know, again, I hate to sound like a broken record when I'm talking about double standards and hypocrisies, but surely, Jared, European Americans, white Americans, will at some point, will they not? Am I asking for too much for them to see that this is just an outrageous an outrageous case of anti-white bigotry, and it's absolutely permissible because she's a non-white. But yet, if we even try to take pride, if we even try to survive, we're called racist and this, that, and the other. Do you think that there will ever be an awakening, Jared? I mean, how much more blatant can the establishment become before there is a fallout, or is there just never going to be a fallout?
Well, believe it or not, I'm fairly encouraged. I listen to C-SPAN radio from time to time, and you know, in the morning they have a call-in program in which one of their hosts reads newspaper headlines and takes calls from around the country. And more, I hear increasingly sensible points of view expressed on C-SPAN radio. The hosts are often quite tongue-tied as a result, and they hang up on these folks. But just the other day, the whole business of Sotomayor had come up, and one guy called up and said, look, if a white man had said, look, myself as a white male, I think chances are I'd arrive at more wiser, better decisions on the bench than a Hispanic lady. He'd be out the door. Please explain. Well, next caller, please. this kind of thing comes up just every now and then, and no one, of course, can explain. I was just thinking the other day, when we used to have national origins quotas for immigration. In other words, the whole idea was to bring immigrants to this country who were very much like the people who were already here. And the people who were already here were about 90% white, and there were very few blacks immigrating, so that meant that mostly, practically all immigrants to the United States were white. Well, as you know, in 1965, we decided to implement an affirmative action program for the entire world and open the whole place up for anywhere and anybody. And at that time, Senator Sam Ervin, he said, well, hold on. What's wrong with the national origins of the American people? What's wrong with preferring that the immigrants be our kinsmen? Well, yeah, no one ever had a good answer for that question back in 1965, and nobody has a good answer to that question today. But, as I said just a moment ago, I think more and more real Americans are waking up to what's happening, even if you would never get that impression from the mainstream media.
You would never get it from the mainstream media, although I would certainly echo your sentiments because of my capacity as host of this radio program. Of course, Jared, you edit one of the most venerable and widely read magazines of the paleoconservative and race realistic right. And so certainly because your readership is so informed and well-educated, you are privy to probably a great deal of feedback, as are we from the listeners of this program, people who have common sense on these issues. But and then again, I would go so far as to say that it's probably a given, at least in my experiences and speaking with people, that a lot of folks behind the confines of their locked doors at home would grouse over a beer and share our thoughts and concerns on these matters as well. But, you know, I guess the trick is getting the embers stoked to the point where instead of griping to one another or griping through anonymous emails that are sent in to organizations such as our own, getting people active. And I was a little bit surprised. We were talking about this. I'm going to ask you your opinion on this, and then we'll turn it over to Bill. I know he has a lot of things he wants to discuss with you as well. Were you surprised to see that, at least to an extent, a far greater extent than I anticipated, the media was publicizing Sotomayor's comments about Latina women being wiser than white men? I mean, I didn't really expect that to see daylight in establishment press circles.
You know, I'm neither surprised nor not surprised. I suppose this was something that they knew conservatives were going to jump on with both feet. And so they would just look like fools if they completely ignored it. So what they have tried to do is contextualize it, explain it, talk about perhaps a poor choice of words. That's been their approach, but they would have looked just terrible if statements as outrageous as these were only brought to light by conservatives and on the Internet.
But, of course, now it goes without saying, too, and I'll let this be the final thought. We're about to go to a commercial break, and then we'll turn it over to Bill and perhaps take some calls. Any calls for Jared Taylor, 1-866-986-NEWS. The media certainly is, you know, they might be speaking of it matter-of-factly, but they are hardly as hysterical as they would have been had the roles been reversed. I mean, could you imagine if, well, Jared, you've been through this God knows how many times. You say something sensible, not even inflammatory. Her statements were actually inflammatory.
Well,
you know what they're going to call you. They're hardly calling her the same thing.
Well, a few brave people didn't Newt Gingrich say that what she said was in fact racist. And that was, of course, the point of that call to C-SPAN Radio, I mentioned.
Hey, set tight, Jared. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bill Rowland, here loading up the show again for James Edwards. And our guest tonight is Jared Taylor, one of our favorite guests. And we've been discussing the issue of Sotomayor, the new Supreme Court nominee from Barack Obama. Jared?
Yes, sir.
We were discussing some other things about the Obama regime in general. And one of the things that has come up, for instance, is the Justice Department basically ignoring or declining to pursue a case against two Black Panthers who were guilty of voter discrimination, voter intimidation at a polling site in Philadelphia. And now it's come forward, for instance, that of the 800 Chrysler dealerships being closed again on the orders of the Obama regime, of those 800, virtually all of them, except for one, are owned by contributors to the Republican Party. Michael Barone of the Washington Examiner has described the Obama regime as a gangster government. Where do you go from there? Do you think that we are actually looking at a totalitarian or quasi-totalitarian regime for the next 4 years?
I think that what Barack Obama is doing is what virtually every American president tries to do, and that is to grab absolutely as much power as possible. That is the nature of any person who actually becomes president of the United States. You have to be greedy primarily for power to go through all the processes that result in being elected president of the United States. Now, I had not heard this about the contributors to the Republican Party in terms of the dealerships. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. I hope that's not true, and I hope that they were not singled out simply for that reason. But the case that you mentioned before that of these Black Panthers on Election Day, perhaps you have gone over this in detail on the air already, but that case was outrageous. They stood there in their military uniforms swinging billy clubs, and one of them is reported to have said to one of the white people who came up to vote, hey, cracker, we're taking over now. And one of the people who had witnessed this had been one of these liberal-minded folks down in the South who was campaigning for black rights. He said that in the South before the Civil Rights Act, he had never seen such blatant voter intimidation as he saw that day. But, of course, because they're black, and at least according to the one story I saw about this, the political appointees at the Justice Department, that is to say Eric Holder, our black attorney general's appointees, they're the ones who stepped in and quashed this prosecution of that voter intimidation case that had made very considerable progress. And now they can walk scot-free except for one guy who's punished by being told he can't bring weapons to a polling station. Now, isn't that a terrible punishment?
Well, I think we've got a singular shift in the dynamic of American politics, though, Jared, because here's this messianic black president who has appointed overtly outspoken racialist members of his administration. And he has allies in many other areas, such as virtually creating ACORN as a sort of private civil army on his – a sort of private civil defense corps on his behalf. I mean, there are some very distinct differences between previous American presidents who perhaps did try to enhance their powers through the ordinary channels. But this is clearly going outside the channels. And
well,
what concerns me
see,
is
– I have to disagree with you there. I think that what Lincoln did during the War of Northern Aggression, what FDR tried to do during the Depression, they all try to go outside the ordinary channels to increase their power. What is significant here is the ends to which Barack Obama is putting that power. And I believe you're absolutely right to say that this is a very much a transformational situation insofar as we have a man who has a consciousness, a racial consciousness, that if not anti-white, is certainly non-white, and he is clearly expressing himself by these appointments and these measures that he's taking. That, I agree, is a very, very important change in the United States, and I think more and more white people are waking up to what's happening.
Well, of course, the difference, and I'll say this, I know you disagree with me about the grab for power, but the significant difference with Abraham Lincoln and that era was that 13 states stood up and said, we ain't going to take it, and actually took up arms to make some effort to stop the extension and the expansion of his power. Whereas we don't see that in America now. We see a much more creeping, much more intrusive government closing around us, and yet there is no really, I would say, militant reaction to this so far. And I don't know. It's very much, in my mind, more like the Bolshevik takeover of the Soviet Union, in the sense that they crept into every bureaucratic department, took it over, and then just said, there is no more democracy, there is no more election here, and dissolved the government as it stood, the Duma. But, you know, let's kind of shift off our own problems here for a second. There are some encouraging developments in other white nations. Great Britain, for instance, there is an appearance, at least, that the BNP, the British National Party, may be on the rise and may be gaining a foothold in the government. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it won't be at Westminster in the Parliament there. Where the BNP is likely to make a significant breakthrough is in elections to the European Parliament. Now, those elections are being held according to proportional representation. That is a much more democratic way, in fact, of running elections than the way we do it in the United States or England. The way it works is that parties, you vote for a party, not for a particular person. And the party will set out a number of people. They'll call it a list. And if they get enough votes to get one of the people into the parliament, and depending on the region of Britain, that can be about 8% of the vote, 10% of the vote, then the first person on the list goes to the European Parliament. If they get, say, 16% or 18% or whatever it takes to send two people, then the second person on the list goes. That way, unlike jurisdictions here in the United States, in which if you want to go to Congress, you've got to win more than half of the vote. This winner-take-all system, a proportional representation system, means that the smaller parties have a voice. And by this system, it is very likely that the British National Party will send at least one man, probably the chairman of the party, Nick Griffin, as a member of the European Parliament. Now, that will be a huge step forward for them, because although they would much rather have representation in Parliament in Westminster and London, this is a real government job with a government salary, and they will get government funding for their next campaign. And there's a possibility that it might not just be one Euro MP, they could get several Euro MPs.
Well, don't we see, though, in Britain and in other parts of Europe, the left is actually taking desperate and draconian measures to prevent both the British National Party and other right-wing parties in Europe from becoming members of the European Parliament. I know we hear about the prosecution of Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, the attempt to suppress Vlaams Belang there. In Austria, of course, there's been sort of smears of the various right-wing parties there. The Northern League in Italy, where it seems like Italy is right now the most fertile ground for the right in Europe. I mean, your thought, what do you think the outcome is going to be from the pressure being applied by the left against the right? Do you think that they're going to have an impact, or are people in Europe pretty much just fed up with their multicultural utopia schemes and are ready to return to nationalism?
I think that increasingly those tactics are not going to work. I think that of all the countries in Europe, perhaps Austria has one of the most promising futures in terms of sensible nationalism. There are two parties now that are associated with the late Jörg Haider, the Freedom Party, and then the other one, which is the Coalition for the Future of Austria. Those parties are likely to return, they could return maybe a score of Euro MPs, to the point where the way the European Parliament works, if you have a parliamentary group, that is how you can start legislation, you can hold hearings, you have all sorts of parliamentary prerogatives.
Jared, we're going to ask you to hold off right there. We're going to conclude our conversation with Jared Taylor right after this, when the Political Cesspool returns on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return, we'll return, we'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the program. Of course, Jared Taylor, editor of American Renaissance, is our guest for the moment, and we are very honored to be joined by him once again. Don't forget to check out Jared's sensational website, amren.com, A-M-R-E-N.com, for American Renaissance. And if you want to read in its entirety the article that we've been discussing about with Jared tonight, the article he wrote for Tacky Mag, we have it posted to our website on the homepage. You can't miss it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And before we went to that last commercial break, Bill and Jared were doing something we don't typically do on this show. They were pursuing an uplifting and positive line of questioning, and I certainly don't want to impede that. So, Bill, back to you, my friend.
Yeah, Jared, before the break, we were talking about proportional representation in Europe in terms of the European Parliament. I think you had a few more thoughts on that.
Yes, just only to add that imagine if we had proportional representation here in the United States. If you voted for party rather than individual, and Americans had an opportunity to vote for a list of candidates with James Edwards on it, with Bill Rowland on it, Sam Dixon on it, perhaps me on it, I think we would end up with a good 10, 15, maybe 20% of the vote. That would translate into 40, 50, 60 congressmen. Imagine how different this country would be. But that would be too democratic for America, I'm afraid, just as it's too democratic for England, which is why they are trying very, very hard to keep the BNP out of any kind of representation.
But you have to take encouragement, I think. And you got me very excited to think of you and Sam in a governmental elected position, Jared. I got to let you know that. But you have to at least reckon that if Europe can do it, I mean, it's a totally different system over there.
Yeah.
But in some ways, they are much more afflicted with political correctness than we are. As bad as it is here, it's even worse over there with regards to hate crimes laws, suppression of freedom of speech, association, so on and so forth. And yet still, nationalistic parties over there, such as the BNP and many others that y'all have already referenced, are growing by leaps and bounds, in fact, sending people to official governmental bodies. So if they can do it, surely we can, when we are still, for lack of a better term, more conservative in our thinking than perhaps they are. So What's it going to take for that to happen? I mean, you would have to completely reform the way elections are held here, and I don't know if that'll ever happen. But
no, that's not necessarily the case. I think that where it would happen would be at the school board level, at the city council level. And frankly, I'm very, very surprised we haven't seen more of that. Now, you've had Frank Borzilleri on your program, haven't you?
Three times, in fact.
Yes. Well, why haven't we had 50, 100 Frank Borzilleris?
Well, you know, that's interesting, Jared. And again, if you rely on the media to let you know where the Frank Borzilleris are serving, you're never going to hear about them. But there are, I think, people out there, people that have come to us. We just had a gentleman on the program last week, Clint Lacey, who is a member of the League of the South and a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens and runs in our circles and shares our righteous beliefs. He was elected just recently, running on that very platform, to the Board of Aldermen for the city of Marble Hill, Missouri. And then, of course, Frank Borzilleri, in an even more high-profile position, elected to a New York City school board. So I think they do exist. It's just that there's no coalition. There's no network there linking all of these individuals together. You really have to go out and search and find them, and in most cases, you never even find out that they exist. They serve as a singular entity. They're out there as the lone wolf. But you know, you're onto something there. Once again, there's no joke about local elections. I mean, small time compared to Congress and the presidency, but that's where the real power still is. It always has been, and these people do exist. We need to find a way to get them working in cooperation with one another, and then we can begin to move.
It would be a huge step in the right direction.
Bill, your thoughts on that?
Well, Jared, you know, since Obama's election, America has been declared a post-racial nation. I say it's post-egalitarian because whites no longer have a stake in any form of equality. We don't have any say in what in defining equality. We're simply told that we still owe all the other races in this country a measure of our prosperity. Nevertheless, I think that the election of Obama, because he did get a mandate from black voters, 95%, that in a sense he has become a party unto himself, and he is virtually hurting the Democratic Party wherever he would have it go. How long do you think that can last? Do you think that even the Democrats are going to begin to, essentially decline to follow Obama's lead and eventually maybe even make some stands that are going to be against his will and against his gospel?
Well, Bill, whenever I see Barack Obama do something that strikes me as particularly awful, the question I ask myself, and this is my benchmark, if Hillary Clinton had been elected president, would she do the same thing? And I hate to say this, but most of the time, no matter what Barack Obama has done, I don't have much trouble imagining Hillary Clinton doing exactly the same thing. What this says is that Barack Obama, He's reflecting the left wing of the Democratic Party in a way that I think resonates with a huge number of those people. You don't find Democrats grousing about how, wait a minute, he's leading the party away from us. They're back behind him 100%. He was just out in, he was out there helping campaign for Harry Reid of the Senate. Reid wasn't saying, no, not in my backyard, big fella. No, he's happy to have him there. Barack Obama is a big draw, and I think not so much as defying or changing the Democratic Party, he increasingly reflects what that party is all about.
Well, clearly there's the anti-war wing of the party, which I don't understand how they could be satisfied so far with his administration, because he has done absolutely nothing to fulfill his campaign promise to get us out of the wars in the Middle East.
Yes.
He has essentially dropped the ball on that, and yet they
You're
continue
right.
to support him.
You're right. I think that is the one area in which you hear Democrats grousing. They figure that they were sold a pig and a poke. That was, in my case, the one thing that I had some hopes from for Barack Obama. And so he's disappointed me, Bill.
I find that hard to believe, Jared. I can't imagine that you would scrape off your Obama bumper sticker now just over the war. I can't see that.
Well, I just feel let down. I feel betrayed.
Well, yeah, it's pretty sad. The one thing.
There's still hope for change.
Change we can believe in.
Indeed.
Well, Jared, it goes without saying it's always our pleasure to host you. We have just a couple of minutes remaining before our time with you is over for the evening. I'd like to extend to you the opportunity to add a final thought, perhaps something we haven't asked you that you'd like to convey to the audience. But before you do so, I'd like to remind everyone once again to check out your website, amren.com. for the American Renaissance, and to subscribe to your wonderful magazine. And if you've enjoyed listening to Jared Taylor tonight over the radio, you're going to love listening to him in person, and you will have that opportunity June 26th and 27th in Jackson, Mississippi, as Jared will be speaking, the keynote speaker, in fact, at the Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference in Jackson, Mississippi. So if you want to go to that, go to our website, email us, and we'll get you all of the pertinent information. Just go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, go to the contact section, and send us an email. We'll let you know how to join Jared there. So that being said, Jared, final thought.
Well, thank you for that plug. My final thoughts are about something we had talked about earlier, how the American public at large is reacting to these things. And as you pointed out, you get feedback from a lot of people who agree with you. I get feedback from a lot of people who agree with me, but in a way that doesn't count. Because those are people who already agree with us. How about the people who don't know about us, who don't listen to your program, who don't read my magazine? What are they thinking? That is the key question. And I am quite encouraged about the answer to that question. And the way I get information about that is when I'm on an ordinary radio program. Just some standard program in California or Texas or wherever it is, and they have call-ins. They almost always agree overwhelmingly with what I have to say. I think Mr. Taylor's right about everything. It's not an uncommon call. And
no.
Even on conservative, so-called conservative radio programs, the host is often amazed. He didn't realize his own listeners were so conservative, so sensible, I should say.
Well, I don't have a hard time believing that at all. In fact, in some of my appearances, I've seen the same thing. Now, I'm not sure if you saw that from the audience on the Queen Latifah show, but, you know, you can't win them all, right?
You did
a hell of a job on that show, too, and I would recommend – that's another reason people should go to Amren. You got it all. Or go to YouTube and do that one. But, see, that's what I love about Jared. He takes the message to the choir, and he takes it behind enemy lines. He does it all, and he does it all very effectively. Certainly one of our greatest leaders and heroes of the contemporary right. So, Jared, we're out of time, but we thank you again, sir, for coming on and for your friendship and support. And we'll see you in Jackson next month.
Yes, sir. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Jared Taylor, everybody. Check him out. Check out American Renaissance. The Political Cesspool returns right after this national news with Dr. Tomislav Sunic.
Coming your way right after these messages.
They pull the rising sun.